Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. It's that time of year again. It's a time where we do prospect minutes. For those who are kind of new to us, I'll describe that in a sec. First, Matt Thompson, our prospect guru, joining us. Matt, how you doing?
I'm great, man. I love this time of year. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun, too.
It is. This is one of the busiest times of year. We got the draft guide coming into shape right now. We're going to do 30 team previews and 30 prospect minutes, so 60 podcasts in the month of January. And this is the first one. And for those of you who weren't with us at the beginning of last season, what we do here is we try to do a kind of a shorter podcast. We talk... I pretty much ask Matt to tell me about each farm system, and we're starting with the Baltimore Orioles, who were the worst team in baseball last year, and that's kind of where we start typically. So
right, it's not a bad. It's an improved system for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, it can't be much worse than it has been.
No, you're right. I'd say roughly close to half of the guys we're going to talk about today are been acquired since July.
Mm-hmm.
Or since June, I should say. The draft was in June. So from June on, they've added a lot of premium talent, I think. So, I don't know if there's any more pieces on the Major League team to really sell off to add more talent. So they might be this might be really it. But they do have the number one pick in the draft next year, so that'll definitely help.
Yeah, that'll definitely add, hopefully, a little bit of heft to the top of their system. But we'll jump right in here. But first, let me just remind people you can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTompFWFB, me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. You can also read a bunch of stuff that Matt does over at ProspectsLive.com, a new venture that he started. And this being a prospect podcast, we definitely want you to go and check out all the great work they're doing over there.
Definitely.
You can catch some of my work over at Fangraphs and Fantasy Alarm, as well as Friends of Fantasy Benefits. So let's start. Usually I like to start kind of with guys who are closer to the majors. Are there any guys who are going to have a 2019 impact?
Yeah, for the Orioles, we could start with the Rule 5 guy. Richie Martin was the number one pick in the Rule 5 draft that they got from Oakland. Martin's a premium defender. He was at AA and had the best offensive season of his career, even dating back to his University of Florida days. He ended up changing his prescription on his contact lenses and doing some eye workouts. And strengthened his eyes in a non-conventional way, but it ended up putting up results on the field, kept his elite plate skills. Not a lot of power speed here. It's like kind of like a might max out at 10 homers and kind of 8 to 10 stolen base kind of guy, but he's going to play shortstop, man. It's pretty barren of the Major League roster right now. I think Jonathan Villar is up the middle at second base, and I don't even know who their shortstop – I mean, he's got to be their shortstop guy right now. Richie Martin is—he's going to get a lot of at-bats. Probably bat toward the bottom of the lineup. He should stick though. It's not a lofty ceiling, but it's a good floor. So he slots in. I mean, we're starting out with him here, but he'll probably slot in around the 10 spot or so on this list at the back half. But he's an interesting guy. I think a couple that could be late season. I'll start with the guy I have ranked number 5 overall in the system, and that's everyone's familiar face, Austin Hayes. He's been up before. He jumped right from AA to the majors, not last year, but the year prior to that, 2016. So his cup of coffee was – or I'm sorry, 2017. His cup of coffee was actually in 2017. 2018, though, for him was a complete wash. He had an ankle injury that knocked him out of the Fall League. He was supposed to go to the Fall League after he missed a lot of time in the regular season and didn't work out again because of injuries. He ended up having ankle surgery to repair a stress fracture. Say that 10 times fast. Stress fracture in his ankle. So they put him on the shelf. He's a kind of a guy looking to – he's going to have to prove it again. But I like Austin Hayes. He's got a little bit of a power, a little bit of speed. He was a third-round pick in 2016. So he's got a little pedigree out of Jacksonville, a little smaller school. But I think he's got – the way the Major League roster is constructed as of right now, there's a lot of openings on the outfield corners. So I think Austin Hayes can kind of has a little bit of a chance to get in there. But he's number 5, and I guess another guy that could come up this year as the top prospect in the organization is Yusnel Diaz. They got him from the Dodgers in the Manny Machado trade. It's kind of a highly criticized trade, but I think the Orioles actually did okay because there's a couple more guys on this list that'll pop in from that deal. But Yusiel Diaz is – there's no real standout tool here. I guess the standout tool is the plate discipline, but that kind of took a hit when he came back. When he came over from the Dodgers, the plate discipline kind of went by the wayside, which – fits the Orioles' standards, but I'm sure that wasn't intentional. But, you know, you look for Diaz. I'm not throwing this comp on him, but he's kind of like a Melky Cabrera type player. He's going to be like a 20, 24 homer, 6 to 10 stolen base guy. Mm-hmm. And he's going to play good, strong defense in right field. He's a line drive hitter, 40% line drive rate, uses all fields. Like I said, the strikeout rate took a hop up to 18% after the trade, but 14% is pretty healthy for the season, or 16%, excuse me, for the season. So that's where he's at. The walk rate went the right direction for the whole season, but again, after the trade, it dropped. 14% walk rate, 16% strikeout rate in this era is pretty good. So Yusiel Diaz is a bat-to-ball guy that he's kind of an accumulator in the sense he's got no standout skills, but he's there. Ryan Mountcastle is another guy that should be up maybe late 2019. Used to be a shortstop. Now he's a third baseman, and he's probably going to end up in the left field. Do you want the good news or the bad news, Justin? What do you want on Mountcastle first?
Ooh, I always like to start with the bad news because, you know, that brings me down, and then you can bring me back up a little.
The bad news is his walk rate was only 6% in AA.
Ooh.
You know what the good news is? The year prior to that, it was 3%, so we doubled it. So I guess take the good with the bad, right? But Mountcastle's best skill for me is the 60-grade power. And I think, you know, 60-grade power with a 55-hit tool that might play down because of the approach, and guys that don't walk tend to be prone to more of the ups and downs of the roller coaster ride-type seasons, the prolonged slumps, and when he's not hitting, you're going to notice it, right? Because he's not walking as much and helping you in other places, especially here because he's not going to run. But Mountcastle can hit, and that's what he's here for. Probably a left fielder because the throwing arm is going to push him. It already pushed him off short, pushed him to third. It's probably going to end up pushing him to left because he profiles better there than he does at second base. He's kind of a bigger guy. But I look at Mountcastle as a guy at ultimate peak that can probably hit 260 with like an OBP just a around 300 with 30 home runs. So, like, he fits the Orioles' standards pretty well right now. I will say I've given him a lot of shit, but the organization is under a massive turnover. The whole front office got wiped out, rightly so, after putting up a terrible season like that. But so they might not be the same Orioles that we're used to making fun of. But Mountcastle and Diaz are pretty good pieces at the top. Austin Hayes should contribute again this year.
You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. All preseason long, we'll be bringing you the most in-depth analysis to get you ready for your drafts. There will be 30 team previews with 30 prospect previews during the month of January. That's 60 podcasts in 30 days. Then, we will be dropping almost daily pods until the start of the season. You can also get your 2019 draft guide called The Fantasy Benefit in ebook and paperback on Amazon.com. Or if you prefer, you can get it via email in PDF form. It has over 250 pages of analysis, player profiles, ranks, strategy guides, and prospect information for cheaper than the magazine you get in the store. Plus, we'll be updating both PDF and ebook all the way until draft season is over for any changes that happen in the landscape of fantasy baseball. Stay tuned all preseason long to Friends of Fantasy Benefits so you can be ahead of the curve.
You might end up seeing Ryan McKenna this year, but I doubt it. He's probably more of a 2020 guy. Earlier, you know, prior to this season, McKenna was looked at as back end of the system guy, back end of a top 20, kind of like fourth outfielder role. But the center field defense has always been there. But he added a leg kick and kind of transformed himself, and he's pitch recognition's better, has a better eye at the plate. Again, no real standout tool. I guess the standout tool is there is no weakness, which is a good thing, but it's not the most flashy thing. But a 12% walk rate across high A and double A is strong at a play. 18% strikeout rate, 9 stolen bases, 11 home runs, hit 315 with a 410 OBP. So that's probably not all that different than you're getting the major league level from him. I don't know if he's a better defender than Cedric Mullins. I don't think so. So McKenna might find himself in the fourth outfielder role there also, because I like Mullins. I think Mullins is a good player. McKenna, average runner, plays up, positive defender, probably doesn't have enough power for the corner spot, but it might have to play corner because of the presence of Mullins. So he's kind of a weird player with the Orioles, but I think he could still be a valuable guy. Dean Kremer came over in the Machado deal from the Dodgers. He popped up this year. 131 innings across high A and double A, 2.88 ERA, 2.99 FIP, 12.2 strikeouts per nine, just over three walks per nine. So that's really good numbers. He was a very mediocre pitcher in college when I saw him at UNLV. I didn't watch him pitch in person, but now he's up to 91, 95 with the fastball as opposed to the, high 80s, low 90s. Now he's 91, 95 with some run, has a nasty curveball, which is the best setup off-speed pitch. Also has a slider or a change, but they're both kind of fringy. So if one of those pitches steps up, it will solidify his future in the rotation. Right now he's only got two usable offerings, and I don't know how progressive the Orioles are going to be, but I mean, with Mike Elias and Sig Medal that are there from Houston, they should be pretty progressive front office. So I wouldn't be surprised if they use Kremer in, I don't want to say an opener role, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was like a 3-4 inning reliever, especially because in the American League you don't have to bat, you know what I mean? So I think Kremer might set up that role. That's if one of these three pitches, one of those changeup or slider, doesn't step forward, which I'm betting that they do. He's athletic. Everything's been on the rise with him. I'm a really big fan of what they did here, and him and Ryland Banning, who they also got in that trade. But Dean Kremer is also I like these little nuggets too. He'd be the first Israeli citizen to make it to the majors if he got there, which would be pretty cool. But I'm a big fan of Dean Kremer. The delivery is nice. Everything's on the rise, and it's a good thing to have. And he throws a lot of strikes, works the corners, but he needs another pitch to step forward to be a rotation piece for long term. Ryland Banning is another guy that I like. They also got him in the Machado trade. He's looking at probably a 2020 ETA, so probably not want to see him this year. But he's kind of a second baseman, third baseman. He actually went to high school at Joliet Catholic Academy, which is about 10 minutes from me, and he played against my brother. So I've seen Banning in person without really knowing. Does that make sense? Like, I go to the games and stuff, and we see Banning playing, and he stood out there on the field. He's always great. Went to Xavier, won Big East Player of the Year in 2017. He can hit, and 15% walk rate. That jumps out at you, right? 275, 389, 507 with 22 homers, 142 WRC plus across high A, double A, four stolen bases. Strikeout rate's around 24%, a little high. But he's a positive defender at second base. He's an athletic guy. Profile's better at third base, but if you can get him, if you can play second, you'd rather have him there because he can handle it there. And he can hit, man. He's a guy that's gotten where he's gotten because of the bat. And I'm a big fan of Ryland Banning. I think they did pretty well in this trade. Banning, Kremer, and Yusniel Diaz are pretty much the useful pieces they got. And that's not a bad haul for a couple months of Machado when you're on your way to being the number one draft pick. So the new organization, whoever comes in there, is going to have a little bit to work with in the cupboard here. They used their first-round pick this year on Grayson Rodriguez. Really big Texas prep kid, 6'5", 220, as an 18-year-old. I mean, how some of those big football coaches in Texas didn't get him on the football field at 6'5", 220, you know what I mean? With how football is out there. But this guy, he's getting criticisms and kind of falling down draft boards in the winter before his senior season. He wasn't getting the college bites that he wanted. So he hit the gym, and the body totally reacted positively. Now he's 92, 94 with the fastball instead of high 80s. He's up to 92, 94 and can touch 97 with a very clean, simple delivery. Has a nice curveball. The changeup's coming along. It's going to be – he's a long way away, but Grayson Rodriguez is the kind of upside – that you dream on in a dynasty league, if you're going to draft an arm, this is one of the guys you take a flyer on late, right? Because he has actual ace potential. And yeah, we know the Orioles with pitchers, but they're cleaning house. They're bringing in a lot of guys from the Astros to run their front office. And last time I checked, Houston develops pitchers pretty well. So to have Rodriguez around and to get him at the 11th pick and potentially turn him into a future ace potentially is an exciting thing. So he's a guy to get on the ground floor on. Zach Lowther was another Big East guy. He's where did he go to? I think he went to Xavier as well. He's teammates with Rylan Bannon. He's got a low three quarters delivery, does Lowther. His game is built on elite extension. His fastball is 88 to 91, but he gets such a – his release point is so low, and he's such a long, lanky guy that it's a different arm angle, and it's really hard to pick up. There's some quotes that I was reading about hitters saying how uncomfortable an at-bat was against him because the ball comes at you from a different angle they're not used to. I am a little bit worried, though, that he turns into, like, not to pick on Steven Gonsalves, but that he ends up like that in the majors, meaning a guy that made a living in the minor leagues off missing barrels and inducing weak contact. Obviously, that's harder to do in the majors, and I don't want to put Lowther in that bucket yet, but there's some risk that that's who he is. The numbers don't really match the stuff. It's more on hiding the ball well, the low arm slot, the different unique delivery, and fastball command. He gets by on fastball command and an above average curveball. 123 innings of 2.18 ERA with 2.75 FIP, struck out nearly 11 guys per nine, walked 2.5. So the numbers, obviously, you can tell, don't back up an 88 to 91 mile an hour fastball with an above average curve. The numbers prove better than that, and he's put up at every level he's been, even in college. So it's hard to be negative on Lowther. I have him like ninth in the system because I'm kind of hedging my bet. I'll be the first to admit that. He's a unique guy. You root for him, but you can't bet long term on the success there because I don't want to commit to that because there's a lot that can go wrong here. He's more of a deception guy. And then I got two other higher upside guys in the lower rungs of the system. D.L. Hall, who was their first-round pick in 2017, the lefty. Only threw 10 innings in 2017 because of the heavy prep workload. Came out here in 2018 and threw just shy of 95 innings of 2.10 ERA, 9.5 Ks per nine, walked too many guys at just over four. But 92-94 from the left side with arm side run, has a curveball that has a chance to be a plus pitch. It's getting 70 grades. And it has some depth as well. It's a nice two-plane break to it. So it's a really good pitch. The changeup, again, needs to come around, and the Orioles are having a lot of issues with changeup guys, right? A lot of changeups for them are lagging. If they can find a way, I know changeups are a hard pitch to learn, but if you can find a way to get changeups to some of these guys in here, that'll be a huge thing for them. Hall has a really smooth, athletic, repeatable delivery. He needs to put on some weight, which could jump up the command and could also jump up the velocity, get stronger, develop a third pitch. There's some relief risk, as I said here, with D.L. Hall, but he's 20 years old. So he pitched in single A last year. He'd probably go up to high A this year, probably spend the majority of the season there. But I'm just worried about him making up for a little bit of lost development time in 2017 when he only threw 10 innings. He missed some time this year, only threw 95. So we need to ramp him up to about 120, 130 innings next year. That's what I'm looking for Hall. I like what I see so far. He'll be inside of our top 100 fantasy lists over at Prospect Live because D.L. Hall is something to look forward to.
Nice.
Yes. And then Gene Carlos Encarnacion is another guy I want to touch on. He was kind of buried in the deep Braves system. They got him for Kevin Gausman. He was in single A last year. He'll be 21 on opening day. 273, 298, 439 slash with 12 homers. 107 WRC plus as a 20-year-old in low A is all right. 3% walk rate, that's not good. But 27% K rate. So obviously you can tell where the issues are. They Braves signed him in 2016. Only gave him $10,000, so he wasn't a really highly thought of name, but he's kind of popped up. A lot of projection here. A lot of projection. He's got an ultimate upside as an average hit tool with an above average power projection with decent defense and a strong arm at third base. He might have to move to first if he gets bigger physically, but as of right now, I think he could stay at third with a 50-55 hit. That'll play. He's earned the nickname Raw Sugar from some of our guys over at Prospect Lab that have seen him.
I like that nickname.
Yeah, that's exactly kind of where he's at. That's a good comparison. They came away. Jason Panini and Jason Woodell saw him at Instructs, Orioles Instructs, and loved it. So I'm encouraged, and I threw him in the 10th spot on this list because he's got upside. He's worth investing in. And, again, it's not the same old Orioles. So their new front office can develop. Who knows how they develop guys? Again, Houston does a pretty good job of that, right? So they're bringing in some of the old guys from there. So hopefully they can take off. The next five guys I have on this list, I have Hunter Harvey, who's still a prospect. He's
out of options though, right?
Yeah, I believe so. And injuries have been the story for the longest time. Hopefully he can stay healthy. I kind of imagine him being the. Remember how they did Dylan Bundy? He was out of options, and they had him kind of as a long man in the bullpen, and then kind of stretched him into the rotation in the second half of the year. I think that's where it's going to go. 95, he was touching 96, 97, sitting 92, 95, according to early this season reports. The plus, at one time it was a double plus curveball. It's kind of bounced back to plus. To be honest, if I told you I knew anything about his ceiling right now, it's a dart throw, right? Because he's missed so much time, mm-hmm. and you don't know if the stuff's bounced all the way back. Early reports are encouraging, but you know what I mean. With a guy like this, you can't bet anything on it. If you have him now, it's because you've had him for a while and you mm-hmm. are stubborn.
In a really, really deep, right. deep league. And
I will say, if he's available in a 30-teamer, I'd grab him. Mm-hmm. Because he's going to get major league innings this year. The upside's still there. And the Orioles aren't going to be competitive. So what's the downside of them giving him, you know, I'm dreaming on this, but what's the downside of them giving him 20 starts?
There is none.
Right. So, yeah, he might put up bad numbers for you in a dynasty league this year, but you can bench him all year, mm-hmm. right, a deep enough roster, and then you can kind of just enjoy the success. Because I still think he's going to be a good arm. He was too highly.
He needs to be protected.
Right. He was too highly regarded not to be. I'm a big pedigree guy. If you have a skill, if you show it once, you own it. Mm-hmm. Right. So obviously, everyone loves the stuff, loves the fastball. The frame, everyone has questions about the frame, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they're right because he got hurt because he's a small frame guy. To be honest with you, I don't think that matters as much as people think it does.
I think it matters more in terms of their long term. Ability to stay healthy. Though there's always going to be
right. Guys. I don't think it has anything to do with Tommy John, though.
No.
Right, and that's so. for hitters. It's more relevant to me, I think, but it's not really for pitchers, if that makes sense.
I mean, a pitcher who throws hard is going to be more susceptible. That's
exactly.
That's what it is.
And when you're a good prep arm, it means you get pitched a lot by your coaches, mm-hmm. right? So you pitch, and if you're a good high school arm, you probably were a good arm when you were 12, and probably a good arm when you were 13, right? So. Yeah. I think that's where the problem is. It comes from crazy usage.
I don't know if you listened to, I think it was the most recent or maybe the previous StatCast podcast where Mike Petriello was talking to Adam Ottavino.
Cool. Okay.
You should go and listen to it because he talks about it. He goes, you know, he's talking to the kids, like, don't be afraid to throw breaking pitches because you're afraid to hurt your arm.
Right. There's no, if you do it properly, it's fine.
Well, and if you're going to hurt your arm, you're going to hurt your arm. It's just,
that's where
you're never going to be discovered if you don't throw those pitches.
Yep. I subscribe to the limited bullets theory. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know what that means, and it's a crude, really crude way of saying that you can delay pitcher injury a little bit, but if it's destined to happen, it's going to happen. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
So might as well let them throw, and I think the Atlanta Braves are doing it right with mm-hmm. how they're moving pitchers up fast.
What the Marlins did with Jose Fernandez.
Yes, Yeah, you know? And that worked out perfect. Got, you know, obviously everything very after well, that
didn't happen, work but, out perfect, but yeah,
no, with his development it did, because he had the Tommy John and came back, and
as opposed to, like, you know, Brett Honeywell, who toiled around the minors and then blew it out right before he had a chance to come up.
They played the service game bullshit with him, and now guess what? Now he lost a whole year development, and now he's going to be 23, 24, breaking in a set of 22.
Well, they lost him in a year where they really could have used him to make a playoff push.
Absolutely, and I still think the Nationals are kicking themselves when they rested Strasburg that year. Remember that, when they made the playoffs and they shut him down? And then they haven't, you know, they haven't been back to the NLCS or anything since. Remember that? So I think, you know, to say you're going to be back is a foolish premonition. So I think you got to let, basically the sum of the story is, let the guys eat. You can't control it. So
I agree.
It's kind of what you got to do. A couple other interesting guys. I have Gene Carmona, who they got from the Brewers in the Jonathan Scope trade. He's an athletic middle infielder. He's probably a second base. He's got some issues with the plate skills, but he's a projectable guy, hit for some power. Came away from Instructs with some of our Prospects Live crew with glowing reports. Blaine Knight was their second draft pick this year. Arkansas. He was Arkansas. Who's their number one starter for the University of Arkansas, who made a deep run in the NCAA tournament this year. So he had a really heavy workload. He didn't pitch much after signing, only threw about 10 innings. But I like him. He's a bulldog guy. 6'3", 165 with a low 90s fastball. Touches 97. Slider, cutter. I think he has potential to move quick because of being a really polished college arm. Adam Hall I like as a middle infielder who doesn't hit for much power yet, but he can run. Got a nice glove. Probably a second baseman. Keegan Aiken, a college lefty. Really good strike thrower. Might have a tough time in the AL East without a really plus pitch, though. So I'm a little bit concerned about that. And then it's a much improved system. There's some other guys. There's five guys from the draft. I'll give it to you for this podcast, but the rest of these, you're pretty much going to have to get the draft guide. But what we're doing is I'm listing five interesting guys from each organization for your first-year player drafts. Because if you're anything like me, you play in a lot of ridiculous leagues where your first-year player draft has like 15 rounds, right? So the standard lists where guys give you, you know, 20-25 isn't going to cut it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I gave you five names per organization, and the five for the Orioles are the Grayson Rodriguez, Blaine Knight, who we touched on both of those guys. Caden Greiner was a shortstop from Oregon State this year. There's another of their high draft picks. More of a glove-first guy. But he's a 70 runner with a projected average hit tool. He's not there yet, and the power isn't really ever going to be a thing. He has a utility guy floor. But the thing I like about, and not necessarily him because he's a collegiate guy, and I don't want to say he's a finished product, but he's close to that. But I'll jump on somebody like Adam Hall. I'll go back to Hall for a second. Guys like him who are really good bat-to-ball and really good defenders obviously have elite hand-eye coordination, right? I mean, it's never failed them to this point. Guys like that are going to be in the lineup. Look at Brandon Crawford. You're a Giants fan, and I'll use the Cardinals example. Yadier Molina, right? Mm-hmm. Both of those guys are superior defenders, and whatever you think of them, there's no way they're not top five of their position, right, on defense.
Yes.
And when they both came up initially, they both couldn't hit for shit.
True.
And even in the minor leagues, they didn't hit. But those two guys had elite hand-eye coordination, and the offense will catch up eventually. And it did, because now Brandon Crawford is an average offensive shortstop with, you know what I mean? He's a really valuable player.
Well, y'all know I don't think he's an average offensive shortstop anymore.
Right, but he was.
But
he
just,
was
just because of what shortstop has become.
Agree with that. Okay, yes. But he's not a black hole on offense either.
Oh, for sure. He's not a negative.
Right, and at a certain time he was. Mm-hmm. And he's worked himself into that. So I always bet on guys like that, and that's why everyone always comes up with the, you know, the defense doesn't matter in fantasy, and I beg to differ. I think it does a lot.
We talk about it all the time.
Yes, and I think it does a lot, because number one, yeah, it might not matter if a guy is average or above average or below average. I mean, there's no real difference there, right? Like Ryland Bannon's not going to be a really stud defender, but he's going to hit.
Mm-hmm.
But like guys like that are real plus defenders, especially at shortstop, they're going to get every opportunity. And when you're in these 30-team leagues, like obviously if you're listening to a Baltimore Orioles prospect podcast, you probably are in deep leagues, you're going to need to know these people because they're going to get at-bats. They're going to get playing time. And you'll find out if you haven't played those leagues, finding at-bats on the waiver wire, not an easy thing. Even if they're the 2002 version of Yadier Molina, you're still going to own them because they're going to play, right? So if you can deal with somebody like this and get in on the ground floor of a really good defensive guy, you should still do it. Obviously, don't mortgage the farm or anything on them, but they're not throwaway pieces because I do think the offense catches up. But a couple other guys, I have two more prep guys from this draft class. Robert Nystrom was an outfielder from Iowa, and Drew Rahm is a left-handed arm. I find them interesting. Rahm's got a couple. He's got a fastball with a good hook, and Robert Nystrom is a bat to ball guy with some speed. Five guys from the draft I like. I think I come away with this Orioles system as more optimistic than I thought I was going to be when we did the Prospect Live piece on them. And they're going to add Bobby Witt Jr. or Adley Rutschman or somebody else from this draft into this list. So I want to say it's probably in the top 12 to 15 range as far as minor league systems. So there's some stuff to be interested in if you're playing for this year when Diaz and Mountcastle and maybe Kremer, maybe McKenna, Austin Hayes, Ryland Bannon maybe even, and even a couple years out with Lowther and probably more realistic, Bannon, Kremer, and D.L. Hall, a couple of these athletic infielders that we touched on. So it's a fun, unique system. I don't mind it at all. You have any going away thoughts on this Orioles system?
There's a couple guys that I find really interesting. I'm a big McKenna fan. And he's,
I know Ralph Lifshitz is a huge McKenna fan.
Yeah, and I've been a big Mountcastle guy in the past, but there are definitely some red flags. It's
got
not,
some thump, though.
It's not a great system, but it's definitely one to kind of keep an eye out, especially as they start this rebuild.
Ryan Mountcastle was he's going to be 21 on opening day this year. He was in Double A. He had 121 WRC plus, which is the third highest mark by any player in the Eastern League, 21 or younger. So that plays.
And I like Hayes a lot because he's kind of a post-type sleeper for 2019.
Very much, very much.
Everybody was all over him last season, and now he's not
drafted. I was a big fan. But we didn't know what happened. The Orioles were kind of quiet about the injury. He had a shoulder injury in spring training, and then he had back pain in spring training. And then he had an ankle injury in May, came back in June, and then he was supposed to go to the Fall League and make up for some of the at-bats, and then they shut him down, and he ended up having ankle surgery. So it's hard, with we don't know information. But Austin Hayes was a sleeper last year, and I think he's even more of one now. Definitely more of one now. But I still think I'm in on him. Obviously, the caveats come that he's not going to walk a ton, but
they have no reason not to play him, though.
100%, right. And, yeah, it's going to be ugly for them. But they're going to be a team that I'm not really going to want to play in the second half of the year. Only because they're going to have a lot of young guys auditioning for jobs. Yusniel Diaz should be – I'm a big fan of Diaz. He's in my top 50 for fantasy. Mountcastle's probably in the top 75 range. D.L. Hall's probably top 75. Austin Hayes is probably just outside the top 100. And Ryan McKenna is right around 100. So there's some guys here.
Yeah. All right. That's going to wrap us up for this episode. Again, you can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTopFWFB. Me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. And you can catch all of our stuff on Friends of Fantasy Benefits, Matt's work over on Prospects Live, where they've got tons of articles and ranks and podcasts. More of my stuff on FanGraphs, on the Sleeper and the Bus podcast, and Fantasy Alarm, where I write for football and baseball. And that'll do it for us. For Matt and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season. Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play till